Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, January 12, 2018. Officials arrest suspects in deadly communal violence in Tonj State.
He come from the other state, from Gonki State, and then he come and fought the people in the market where the conflict was erupted in Jalwau market. So now we arrest them and they are under investigation and they accepted their mistake.
And the World Health Organization is investigating mysterious deaths of three people in Eastern Lake State.
The first death was on 19, the second on 26, and the third was on 27. Among the contacts, there was no bleeding manifestation, so we had to take blood sample from seven people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The chairperson of the African Union Commission, Musa Faki Mohamed, and the Secretary General of the United Nations, Antonio Guterres, strongly condemned recent violations of the agreement on cessation of hostilities, protection of civilians, and humanitarian access in South Sudan. The two leaders called on all warring parties in South Sudan to immediately cease all hostilities, stop further military operations, and uphold their commitments to the December 2017 ceasefire deal. The leaders issued a statement this past hour calling on the warring parties in South Sudan to uphold their primary responsibility to protect civilians, adhere to international human rights law and humanitarian law, and ensure safe and unhindered access to humanitarian organizations. The chairperson of the African Union Commission and the Secretary General of the United Nations underscored the determination of the international and regional community to ensure that the parties abide by their obligations and responsibilities. The AU and UN expressed their full support for the second phase of the High-Level Revitalization Forum under the leadership of the Intergovernmental Authority on Development. They called on the parties to participate in the forum in good faith and with a view towards reaching a compromise and bringing South Sudan back to the path of sustainable peace. Local leaders in Tonj State say they have arrested 16 people suspected of participating in intercommunal clashes that left 40 people dead last year. The Tonj State governor says the culprits were identified by their own communities. State officials say they will set up a special tribunal to try the suspects. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Attacks and revenge attacks between the Thiek and Jalwau communities have repeatedly occurred since 2012 over land disputes. Tonj State Governor Akay Tong Aleu confirms the government arrested 16 people and says the suspects have identified 14 others involved in the attacks. Governor Aleu says one of those arrested is believed to be a ringleader of the killings and revenge attacks who comes from neighboring Gonki State.
He come from the other state, from Gonki State, and then he come and fought the people in the market where the conflict was erupted, in Jalwau market. So now we arrest them and they are under investigation and they accepted their mistake.
Governor Aleu says the suspects are accused of killing more than 40 people and wounding nearly 50 others. He says Tonj State officials are working with the counterparts in Gonki State to establish a special court to try the suspect arrested from both states.
Now, that citizen who comes from Gonki is a criminal, is an unwanted person by the people of Gonki even. They have saw two or three murder cases that he committed and then he ran out from there. He come and hide himself in the Jalwau area, where he come and commit another crime there.
Peter Ranyon Dut, the commissioner of Gonki State's Chobet County, says clashes between the communities along Gok-Tonj border over grazing land has gone on for too long.
When I came up as a commissioner, I heard that there are some cattle camp youth of Gonki State were arrested, and I never count of them because my county has no one among those people. So I was not concentrated to know their number there. That's why I never know the number of them.
Governor Aleu admits that up to 80% of the people in Jalwau and Thiek communities are armed. He says state authorities will disarm all civilians in both states to prevent further violence, but did not specify when.
So we are waiting a reply from the authority in Juba. If they give us green light, then we will contact it immediately and then we will start with a disarmament in that area. But we are aware of them that no, we don't want to see anybody carrying guns along the road or in the area of the government areas, like in the town and so forth.
Governor Aleu is urging Tony state communities to voluntarily surrender their guns to local chiefs before the army forcefully disarm them. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
The World Health Organization says it is investigating a suspected outbreak of hemorrhagic fever in Ural County of Eastern Lake State. WHO's Technical Officer for Emergency Preparedness and Response in South Sudan says at least three people have died in the area from a mysterious illness. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Dr. Pinyi Nyimol, Director for Disease Control at South Sudan's Health Ministry, says a pregnant woman, a teenage girl, and boy all died of suspected hemorrhagic fever last month in different villages in Ural East County of Eastern Lakes State. Nyimol says 2 days ago, the government sent a team of health experts to Ural East, where CGC people are being monitored closely for any symptoms of hemorrhagic fever.
So, as you know, we received a report about death in December of three people after manifestation of bleeding. The first death was on 19, the second on 26, and the third was on 27. Now, they are from one area but different households. Among the context, there was no bleeding manifestation when we arrived on Sunday in the area, so we had to take blood sample from seven people.
Nyimol says symptoms include high fever and vomiting blood. He says a few domestic animals and wild birds have presented similar symptoms. WHO and Health Ministry officials have ruled out any viral hemorrhagic fever outbreak after seven suspected cases were tested in Uganda's Virus Research Institute. Dr. Otim Patrick, WHO's Technical Officer for Emergency Preparedness and Response in South Sudan, says tests performed so that the outbreak is not contagious.
The first panel of tests was for the common viral hemorrhagic fevers we know. So they tested for Marburg, they tested for Ebola, they tested for what we call Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, they tested for Rift Valley fever, and then they tested for one other called Sosuga virus. So all those were negative. Now the next step is to test for other, what we call arboviruses, which are viruses which are carried by ticks. This is the next step. That's what they are going to do. They will also test for those tick-borne viruses like yellow fever, West Nile virus, and another one called chikungunya. So in the next 1 or 2 days, we shall hear from them if they have been able to identify any of those. So for now, those people whom we have been following, the few who had symptoms, all of them are okay. There was another girl who was the seventh sample. She was from another community altogether, not from that Tona Buktok village. She was also tested. She has been discharged today. She's fine. She's also negative. So the few people we have been able to identify who had some symptoms in that area, we have tested them. They are negative.
Dr. Patrick says health officials are still monitoring the situation to ensure that the outbreak is not viral Ebola hemorrhagic fever.
Now, the second angle of investigation we are taking is now the one in animals, because we have seen deaths in animals. So we are thinking it is what we call zoonotic disease, a disease that starts in animals and spreads to humans because of the close interaction between humans and animals. So during the investigation, I discovered that some of the animals had been dying, and those people who were skinning these animals, they noticed that these animals were also bleeding under the skin. So we suspect it could be something that could have started from the animals and spread to humans. And our colleagues have also collected samples from the animals, and currently they are working to test these samples from also the animal health labs, and we are waiting for those results. So they could also be able to come up with a diagnosis for us of what is the disease is.
Ebola, Marburg, and yellow fever are among viral hemorrhagic fevers that have caused deadly outbreaks in Africa in the past. From 2013 to 2016, more than 11,300 people died during the worst outbreak of Ebola, which hit Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Dr. Patrick says even though an outbreak has not been confirmed, people should not take chances.
Our message here is that, one, we have seen that the disease is really not spreading from person to person. That is very, very important. The second one is that for those that we have tested so far, they have all been negative for most of the viral hemorrhagic fevers that we fear, including Ebola and Marburg. The third one is that for prevention, we always advise people that when you see animals becoming sick and dying on their own, people should avoid eating or coming in contact with those meat of those animals that have died of whatever sickness, because a disease that is able to kill animals, when it jumps to human beings, it becomes even much worse than when it is in the animals. So in all those surrounding areas and in the cattle corridor where people are keeping cattle, if there is any cluster of deaths in animals, people should avoid eating those, and they have to coordinate with the animal extension workers so that this can be investigated. So for now, what we have been treating, we are still treating it as a suspected viral hemorrhagic fever outbreak, which is not confirmed. The common ones, we have tested the humans, we have not seen, so we are waiting to see what the result we will get from the animal.
Dr. Patrick says health officials are waiting on the test results of animals to see if they are carrying a disease. Health Ministry officials say they are monitoring Yirol West and East and will immediately report any bleeding symptoms similar to those of hemorrhagic fever. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, reaction is strong to President Trump's use of expletive when describing African countries and immigration. Find out more on that story.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help young people discover their talents and develop them?
I think that can be done like from an early stage. Most of us right now are suffering and struggling with things because our parents didn't take the chance of getting to know our talents when we were very young. Because if a kid is young, you can easily tell what he or she is interested in.
I encourage you on how to develop your talent. If there is a need for money, and if I have, obviously I can give you.
What I can do is to inspire that young person to continue with that talent. And to develop them is to make sure that I continue working with that person.
Well, to me, I cannot help them in discovering, but whoever discovers himself, I can help in developing. And he has the will to develop.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Reaction are continuing to come in to President Trump's apparent crude reference to Haiti and African countries. Trump stunned lawmakers in a White House meeting on immigration yesterday when he reportedly referred to Haiti and African nations in an offensive terms. His comments was first reported by the media, including the Washington Post, the New York Times, and CNN. Trump said the United States should let in more people from places such as Norway, whose prime minister he met with in the White House Wednesday. The White House has yet to deny reports that the president used vulgar language when talking about Haiti and Africa. Trump reportedly made the remarks as Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois, was explaining the outlines of an agreement reached by six bipartisan senators. The agreement would protect nearly 800,000 young immigrants from deportation, as well as bolster border security. So far, the White House had not responded to international fallout over Trump's reported comment. While condemning President Trump's comment on the two African nations, one South Sudanese says the majority of Africans are hardworking and come to U.S. to make a better life for themselves. Ayen Bier has more.
David Dow, a congressional legislative fellow and a former lost boy of Sudan, was shocked yesterday when reports surfaced of President Donald Trump using a foul word to describe certain countries. Dow, who spends a lot of his time working on South Sudan issues, says many Africans contribute to American society in a very positive way.
The majority of the Africans who come here are already here on the merit-based immigration. So if you look at a lot of Africans, either they are Ethiopian, South African, or Nigerian, many of them are doctors, they are nurses, you know, they are dentists, and what have you.
In a tweet Friday morning, Trump distanced himself from the reports, saying his language during the meeting on immigration was tough, but it was not the language he used. Dow says the damage has already been done.
You know, because of the global connectivity, you know, the social media and everything, they will see a comment like this from the leader of the free world. And how will I be telling them that America is the greatest country, you know, on the planet if they hear things like this from the leader of the free world? So this is where it becomes very tricky because, you know, you have so many people in Africa and in South Sudan in particular that have nothing, that are refugees in Kenya, Uganda, and all over the place. And their only hope is to find an opportunity to resettle either in the U.S., Canada, or Australia. You know, but when they hear comments like this, plus other things that have been going on, like, you know, the issue of, you know, policing in Australia with the South Sudanese community, that is, it discourages people from trying to seek, you know, opportunities outside. The people that could come to these countries and be doctors and be, you know, and join the military and do other great things.
The reaction to the news came from around the world. Speaking to the Associated Press, African Union spokeswoman Eba Kalando said, quote, "Given the historical reality of how many Africans arrived in the United States as slaves, this statement flies in the face of all accepted behavior and practice," end quote. The level of alarm was shared by Dow, who says the idea is to work towards a better world.
The goal is to always make Africa better, you know, and when you hear comments like that, it makes you feel like you haven't done anything over the last years, you know, of your life as a volunteer or as an advocate, you know. So the one hope for an encouraging comment. So, but a comment like this, it make me feel like, you know, if he thinks like that and he is the leader of the world, then is he going to give money next year to fight anger or AIDS or other things in Africa?
While his country regularly makes headlines for conflict, hunger, and a growing refugee population, Dow believes that the best is yet to come for South Sudan.
Majority of the South Sudanese populations are below the age of 34. That is a bright future, and it is a future that we can work to create an alternative society that will be different from what our current uncle and fathers are running. So there is a better South Sudan that is on the horizon that the world could be proud of, you know, in comparison to what we have now. You know, what we have now are people that are holding grudges from the war they fought together. And it's also the attitude of get rich quick because of the people in power trying to grab as much resources as they can, you know, and that is why we are where we are now. So I want the American people to understand that the idea of South Sudan that, you know, America supported to be free is still there. You know, it's still there. South Sudan will be the country we all desire.
Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
South Africa's city of Cape Town is approaching what its mayor calls Day Zero, the day 4 million people will have to shut off their tap because the city runs out of water. The saga has also taken on political tones, with the warnings from the mayor being overshadowed by allegations of misconduct. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Day Zero, Cape Town Mayor Patricia de Lille acknowledges, sounds like a Hollywood movie. It is the day the city will implement its harshest water restrictions to date. This week, she explained what will happen when the water supply reaches a new low point.
Then at that point, we will turn off most of the taps. We will not turn off the taps We will reduce the pressure in poorer areas like informal settlements, but we'll turn off the taps and then add a blood approximately 200 sites across the city. People will have to go and collect water from there. And when you collect your water from there, you will only receive 25 liters per person per day.
The beautiful beach-lined port city has suffered drought for 3 consecutive years. For months, officials have imposed strict controls on the city's water supply. Cape Townians have been banned from washing their cars, watering their lawns, or filling their pools, and have been encouraged to keep showers under 2 minutes and only flush the toilet when absolutely necessary. The latest restrictions, imposed January 1st, slashed each household's monthly allowance nearly in half. But critics of the mayor and her party say it is unfair to blame the situation entirely on the drought. DeLille is a member of the Democratic Alliance Party, which has long ruled the Western Cape province. The mayor has come under fire for unrelated allegations of misconduct and corruption, which are prompting calls for her dismissal. African National Congress acting party leader in the province, Kaya Magatla, says the Democratic Alliance record of mismanagement is partly to blame for the water crisis.
When this thing was raised more than 5 years ago, that we are undergoing a serious drought in the Western Cape due to the natural causes, including the global warming. But the DA failed to execute mechanism in order to restrict the use of water, in order to manage that process properly, to extend that we are now reacting in a crisis that is already over our head.
Civil society groups like the South African Water Caucus say water allocation is the responsibility of the national government and blame the ANC-led national government for failing to release enough drought funding due to mismanagement and corruption at the national level. Mayor DeLille says she is optimistic that if Cape Townians can stick to the limits, they can push Day Zero back.
We can avoid Day Zero if we all work together.
In the meantime, Cape Townians hope and pray for Day One of a long, soaking rain. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Kenya is embarking on a pilot program this month to overhaul its education system. The aim is to emphasize skills over knowledge to better prepare youth for the evolving job market. Notably, the new curriculum would include more STEM courses and more vocational training. Rahel Ombor has the story for VOA from Nairobi.
If implemented, this would be only the second major reform to Kenya's national school curriculum since independence. The last such change in 1985 moved the country to the so-called 8-4-4 system, 8 years of primary school, 4 years of secondary school, and 4 years of university. Now, Kenya's education ministry is rolling out a new model dubbed 2663. The goal is to get students ready for existing and emerging jobs. Kenya has one of the highest rates of unemployment in East Africa, according to the 2016 UN Human Development Index. Sarah Ruto is the chairperson of the Kenya Institute of Curriculum Development, a government agency.
The 844 system has needed to be changed because it was no longer addressing the needs today. If you look at employers, they always say that the graduates they're getting do not have the skills and competencies to fit in the job market. And this might then bring us back to the education system. How are we teaching?
Officials say the new system supports the government development plan called Vision 2030 to transform Kenya into an industrialized middle-income economy by the end of the next decade. The 2663 system reshuffles the number of years students spend at the primary, secondary, and university levels. Children will enter preschool at age 4 and stay 2 years. The student will then move to 6 years of primary school, where the focus will be on logical thinking, social skills, and digital literacy. Next will be 6 years of secondary school to include rigorous career guidance. The last 3 years would be centered around arts, sports, financial literacy, entrepreneurship, and STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Students would focus on a specific area based on their abilities. Digital literacy would be a main facet throughout, and schools would shift away from exam-based evaluation. Secondary school students would sit for a final exam to determine whether they will move to an additional 3 years of either university or additional vocational training. Ruto says Kenya is following the global trend.
There are so many changes happening, and one of the biggest changes is technology. and how technology is shaping and impacting. If you do not sit back and start for reforming, then you will find that what you're doing in the school is very different from what is happening. And this will mean that when your children start graduating from the school system, they're being trained for something that is not in society.
However, experts warn that a new curriculum is not a magic bullet. They say Kenya must also address other issues, for example, frequent teacher strikes and lack of basic necessities in schools like desks. The new model is being tested in schools selected by the government. If all goes well, educators will submit a formal plan for a nationwide overhaul to Parliament for debate and approval. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Leaders in Tonj State say they have arrested 16 people suspected of carrying out intercommunal violence, which left at least 40 people dead last year. The Tonj State governor says the culprits were identified by their own communities. Officials say they will set up a special tribunal to try the suspects. Attacks and revenge attacks between two ethnic communities have repeatedly occurred since 2012 over land disputes in the area. Tonj Governor Tong Alu confirms the government arrested 16 people and says the suspects have identified 14 others involved in the attacks. Alu says one of those arrested from Gok State is believed to be the ringleader of the killings. Alu says the suspects are accused of killing more than 40 and wounding 50 others. The World Health Organization says it's investigating a suspected outbreak of hemorrhagic fever in Yarrow County of Eastern Lake State. Dr. Odom Patrick, who is Technical Officer for Emergency Preparedness and Response in South Sudan, says at least three people may have died in the area. Dr. Pinyin Niemol of South Sudan's Health Ministry says 2 days ago, the government sent a team of health experts to Yarrow East, where 60 people are being monitored closely for any symptoms of hemorrhagic fever. And finally, leaders around the world are reacting with shock to an expletive President Donald Trump apparently used to describe Haiti and African countries in a meeting with U.S. lawmakers on immigration. Trump said the United States should let in more people from places such as Norway, whose prime minister met with the president recently. While condemning Trump's comment, one South Sudanese says the majority of Africans are hardworking and come to the U.S. to make a better lives for themselves. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with a classic song, Bambe Makaimot by Kero.
Kaimo moya garwa saki Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki Zaman motoroz de mat turudumara Zaman mataraz de mat turudumara Bambe makaimo moya hilo asaki Bambe makaimo moya hilo asaki Washini dunga mayan me pare Washini dunga mayan me pare Aparwe miajiro jini kusende unakwalio
We have been listening to Eskiro with the song Bambe Makaimot. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear what you think about this show. You can reach us at southsudan@voanews.com. Check us out on our Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Have a safe weekend, and we look forward to seeing you next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Zaman barad zede marana madairo Ya bai guri chugwa gya yeah, 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 yeah.